Kofi Annan, one of the world's most celebrated diplomats and a charismatic symbol of the United Nations who rose through its ranks to become the first black African Secretary General, has died. He was 80. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley reports.
His foundation announced his death in Switzerland's capital Bern in a tweet saying he died after a short unspecified illness. It did not give details and remembered the Nobel Peace Prize winner as radiating genuine kindness, warmth and brilliance in all he did. Annan spent virtually his entire career as an administrator in the United Nations. His aristocratic style, cool-tempered elegance and political savvy helped guide his ascent to become its seventh Secretary General and the first hired from within. He served 2 terms. I'm Zaria Shackley.
Imran Khan has been sworn in as Pakistan's prime minister. The 65-year-old captured 176 of the 272 ballots cast in the lower house of parliament. His rival secured 96 votes. The opposition candidate is the younger brother of the former prime minister, who was convicted and sentenced last month to 10 years in jail on corruption charges. According to CNN, a report says that munitions experts say that a U.S.-made bomb was used by the Saudi-led coalition in a recent airstrike in Yemen that hit a busload of children in a marketplace. That killed 51 people, including 40 children. A spokesman for the Saudi-led coalition said earlier this month the airstrike targeted Houthi rebels in the market and conformed with international humanitarian law. U.S. President Barack Obama banned the sale of precision-guided weaponry to Saudi Arabia in 2016 after Saudi Arabia used a similar bomb in another deadly attack. The Trump administration overturned the ban. This is VOA News. Hundreds are dead in India's Kerala state and hundreds of thousands more forced from their homes in the latest flood as the total displaced for this monsoon season hits 2 million people. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reports.
A makeshift bridge shows a desperate situation in India. More rains coming down this weekend on floods that have killed hundreds. And there's fears that even when the rain stops, waterborne illnesses will add to the death toll. These are fishermen trying to get the elderly and vulnerable into their boats. It's taking place in the state of Kerala, the worst flooding for that region in over a century.
Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting. Days after removing former CIA chief John Brennan's security clearance, U.S. President Trump is targeting the clearance of a Justice Department official. More from AP Sagar Magani.
The president's been blasting Bruce Orr, whose wife worked for the opposition research firm involved in compiling a dossier on Trump's ties to Russia. The president says Orr shouldn't even have a security clearance.
I think Bruce Orr is a disgrace. I suspect I'll be taking it away very quickly.
The move to take Brennan's clearance has drawn fire from several former national security officials, but the president's not backing off.
Security clearances are very important to me. Very, very important. And I've had a tremendous response for having done that.
Saying he's never respected Brennan, who has sharply criticized the president. Sagar Magani, Washington.
President Trump again attacked Turkey over its continued detention of an American pastor. This Istanbul businessman spoke to Reuters about all of it.
We shouldn't make concessions. The United States is far away, but it wants to show its political strength in this region. Therefore, there's not much we can do. Let's keep up the resistance.
Pastor Andrew Brunson is at the center of the spat between Washington and Ankara. The White House says that he is innocent of terrorism charges, while Turkey insists his future must be determined by the courts. Jurors continue to deliberate evidence presented in the trial of President Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, who faces 18 counts of tax and bank fraud. Mr. Trump spoke to reporters about the trial.
He worked for me for a very short period of time. But you know what? He happens to be a very good person. And I think it's very sad what they've done to Paul Manafort.
The case has drawn particular interest in the United States because it is the first trial conducted by Special Counsel Robert Mueller's prosecutors in a wide-ranging investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. elections. More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Annan embodied democracy. Annan embodied peace. He was a quintessential Ghanaian in stature. If you look at his personality, the ability that he's got to use his personality alone to calm nerves, to actually get people to rally around diplomacy and peace is absolutely unparalleled.
Former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan dies in Switzerland Saturday.
We've been protesting the issue of trying civilians in military courts right from the time many civilians have been taken to the court martial. Our contention has always been that the court martial is not for civilians.
Supporters of a popular Ugandan parliamentarian, Bobi Wine, demand his release.
Just because something works in animals doesn't mean it will also work in humans.
We cannot say whether it has shown any benefit because we don't have anything to compare it with.
And five experimental treatments are being used to end the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Kofi Annan, the Ghanaian-born former United Nations Secretary General, has died in Switzerland. He was 80 years old. Annan's family and his foundation announced on Twitter that he passed away peacefully after a short illness. During his distinguished career and leadership of the United Nations, he was an ardent champion of peace, sustainable development, human rights, and the rule of law. For reaction from Ghana, I reached Dr. Kobi Mensah, senior lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School, Legon, in the capital, Accra.
It's a very, very sad news. It's a very terrible news that has actually hit the Ghanaian community, home and abroad. In fact, this morning, immediately, I saw the message in one of the platforms. I was shocked by it, and I was hoping that it was a hoax. Now, one prompted me immediately that, listen, social media is the breaker now. So you can imagine, how news actually spreading. So we kept checking, and I found another message that says that it was a hoax. Everybody was excited by that, and we thought that, yes, that was a hoax. But unfortunately, we heard a breaker from Joy News, and that was a nail. And honestly, I couldn't believe it.
How significant was Kofi Annan to Ghanaians and to the international community?
Well, I think Annan embodied democracy. Annan embodied peace. I mean, he was, as I put it, a quintessential Ghanaian in stature. I mean, if you look at his personality, the ability that he's got to use his personality alone to calm nerves, to actually get people to rally around diplomacy and peace is absolutely unparalleled. So I think that he was crucial to Ghana, first and foremost, as he was a check on our behavior. In fact, Ghanaian leadership actually looked to Kofi Annan for checks. So if you quite remember, when we had the electoral disputes, where the political parties after election had to go to the courts to settle, I think a lot of people made references to Annan, and he came in. In fact, it's on record that he had spoken to the leaders. So, in fact, he was an absolute check on our behavior as a nation. And I suppose he was in an absolute check on the global stage as well. And I'm not sure that anyone would dispute that. That in times of tribulations, in times of warmongering, he was the pillar of peace. And I think, with his personality, he was able to calmness. And although we had, few wars, I think that if he hadn't been Annan, things would have been very worse. I mean, they would have been very, very bad.
Some are suggesting that being a Nobel laureate, the world really liked his diplomacy and he stood out as a diplomat. How do you react to that?
Of course, that's a very, you know, it's a true reflection of Annan's leadership in the, at the world stage. And I suppose that, you know, no one would disagree with that particular, you know, what do you call description or, you know, personalization of him. He was a true diplomat. I mean, he lent the trade, but of course his person itself, you know, also spoke about diplomacy. He was a total embodiment of what diplomacy means, the calm demeanor, the way he speaks, the way he articulates issues, the way he brings, you know, parties on board. It was charming. I mean, I would not foresee, or I can't foresee, you know, someone actually disagreeing, you know, with Annan in any sphere, in a way that people can disagree with other world leaders. It is very difficult to actually, you know, go against his charisma, his way of appealing to people. I think it's very difficult. So Kofi Annan was a complete, you know, embodiment of diplomacy and of peace. And I think that the world has really, really lost, you know, a global person, an icon that we looked up to.
Some are saying to me that this is a sad day for Ghana, Africa, and the world because the world has lost a true gem. Your final thoughts?
Very well said, you know, very well said. I think that the entire, you know, world would be, you know, grieving, and especially areas that actually face afflictions and, you know, tribulations, where he managed, you know, to calmness and to actually bring peace into some of these areas, will be extremely, you know, shocked, and they will be grieving. In fact, it is about time, we always say that it's about time for us to celebrate his life. And I'm sure Ghanaians, Africa, and the world globally, I mean, the world at large, would look up to his, you know, his time and then celebrate his person and his work. But it is a good shock, and the communities are actually in shock, and we are grieving by now. But I think we must look up to the positives and then try to, you know, live by his tenet, live by his principle, that the world could be a better place with diplomacy, but not war.
Dr. Kobbi Mensah is a senior lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School. He spoke with me from Accra. Meanwhile, Dr. James Jonah, a former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, worked with Kofi Annan as a former colleague. For more about the man he knew, Dr. Jonah joins us live via telephone link from New York. Good afternoon, Dr. Jonah.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Quite well.
So your thoughts about the demise of Kofi Annan, your former colleague?
Well, I was very shocked because I did not hear of any illness. So this came very sudden. Although I must say, when I listened to him speaking few weeks ago in Zimbabwe, I noticed that his voice was not the usual Kofi Annan's voice. But I had nowhere to find out what was going on.
Now, as a former colleague, who was Kofi Annan to you?
Well, I first met Kofi Annan in Cairo, Egypt, when I was the Secretary General representative of the establishment of United Nations Emergency Force in 1973. In fact, it was in November. And he walked up to my office to introduce himself as the new personnel chief for the mission. And that's when we struck a friendship. Following his stay in Cairo, he came to join the UN Secretariat in New York, somewhere around mid-1973. And very strangely, when I became head of human resources in 1979, he was working with me in my office. So, I was glad to be the one who was able to send him in 1981 to Geneva to head our personnel office with UNHCR. So it's a very long relationship. And we served together under Boutros Ghali. I was the U.S. Chief of Political Affairs while he was the head of peacekeeping in the U.N. So it's a very long relationship.
Interesting, Dr. Jonah. So what would you say his legacy is?
Well, his legacy is quite diplomacy. He reminded me, because I knew another Ghanaian longer than Kofi Annan, which was Kenneth Darzi. I don't know whether you know Kenneth Darzi. Kenneth Darzi was a dominant figure in the Secretariat, also working mostly in the economic and administrative sector as Kofi. Kofi, most of his time in the UN, worked in the administrative and financial system and was only brought to the political sector by Boutros Ghali in 1992. So I think that approach, non-confrontational, trying to find ways to get along, I think was Kofi Annan's hallmark.
Well, Dr. Jonah, if I may ask you, how did his colleague or subordinate at the UN view the man you came to work closely with over the years?
Well, they all have this. They liked him because when he was brought back to the UN Secretariat under Pierre de Quer, he came to head the budgetary section of the Secretariat. And he has a very pleasant, calming personality. And his staff, they liked him a great deal. In fact, he traveled with his close staff wherever he went. After he left the budgetary and financial sector and became the head of personnel, they went with him. And when he became the Assistant Secretary General initially for peacekeeping, they went with him. And when he became Secretary General, the same group of five or six went with him. So they liked him very much because he was very pleasant. And particularly, I must say, when he came after Boutros Ghali, who was a very austere scholar, they everyone appreciated Kofi Annan very much.
Now, when he went into private life after serving at the UN, he became a leading member of the Elders Forum. How did the world see the group, particularly with his recent visit to Zimbabwe, the latest of which we saw before the elections? As a private citizen, what do you think of him before his death?
Well, people appreciated it very much. It was not always a normal practice for ex-Secretary General to be engaged in other activities. For example, I think of Hutton, I think of Pierre de Quer, and Boutros Ghali. They never did, but Kofi Annan continued to work in the humanitarian field and for peace, taking on missions, for example, the one on Syria, working very closely on the Kenyan. He made a real mark after that terrible election warfare. So it was very much appreciated by his colleagues and the international community. He just continued what he had been known for, which is the pursuit of peace and humanitarian conditions. And I must say that later on, he seemed to have taken an approach which was different from when he was Secretary General. He realized that there are times when you have to put up a very strong fight to get the positions through, because, you know, the international community is a very rough place. And I think he did that in some of the interviews he did after he left the UN Secretariat.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jonah. That was James Jonah, a former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. He spoke with me from New York. Supporters of the popular Ugandan parliamentarian and musician Bobi Wine are demanding his immediate release. This after Bobi Wine was charged with illegal possession of firearms and ammunition at the military court in Gulu Thursday. The military court said Bobi Wine will continue to be remanded until August 23rd. His lawyers say the lawmaker was assaulted while being held by the authorities. For more about the case against the parliamentarian, I reach his lawyer Asuman Basilirwa in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
He couldn't answer to the charges because of his health condition. When I met him and spoke to him, he was in pain. He could not speak audibly. He was incoherent. The face was swollen. He couldn't walk without assistance, and he was visibly in pain. Yesterday, the family and a few lawyers were allowed access to him, but the medical doctor was denied access. So as we speak now, he's still in military detention in Makindye military barracks here in Kampala.
Why is he being tried or the case being heard at a military tribunal or court since he is not a military person? He is a lawmaker or a parliamentarian in Uganda.
Well, we've been protesting the issue of trying civilians in military courts right from the time many civilians have been taken to the court martial. Our contention has always been that the court martial is not for civilians. It's for military officers. But there is a way the court martial continues to interpret the provisions of the Uganda People's Defense Forces Act to the effect that they have jurisdiction to try civilians who are found in possession of firearms. And yet our laws, the laws in this country, provide for offenses where one is found with firearms to be tried in civilian courts. And as we speak now, there are cases before the Constitutional Court to determine the constitutionality of trying civilians in military courts. Unfortunately, the Constitutional Court has not yet pronounced itself on that matter. So the state continues to take civilians in the court martial, but we believe it is wrong, it is unacceptable, and it's not the proper place for civilians to be tried.
But critics of Bobi Wine are of the view that why should he have guns on him? What is he going to use it for? Because people fear that the possession of guns could be used to create more chaos in those areas ahead of the by-election.
Well, who saw him with the guns? As far as we are concerned, Bobi Wine has never held a gun. He does not even know, even in his life, he has never touched a gun. The guns were found in a room in a hotel where he never resided. And the hotel owner came out very clearly to say his clients in that hotel have never had guns. They were thoroughly checked. So the issue remains where the guns came from. And you know, in this country, it is not unique to fabricate evidence. There are many opposition politicians here who have been charged with the possession of guns before. And the courts have found out that indeed it was fabricated evidence. A case in point is Dr. Kizza Besigye, a former presidential candidate. So nobody can actually give evidence to the effect that they saw the wife with a gun or in the room where he was residing had a gun. But since it's a matter before court, we will wait to see the evidence they bring and we'll challenge it accordingly.
So are you saying that the charges being leveled against your client, Bobi Wine, are being trumped up on political grounds?
Yes, he's being politically persecuted. Mr. Museveni and his regime have never faced a credible opponent like Bobi Wine. Bobi Wine represents a generation, 18 to 40 years, who are the majority. So he's a very popular personality in Uganda. The candidates he has backed in elections, including myself, have had victories, okay? About a month ago, he came, I was contesting for parliament, He rallied behind me, and I won decisively. He has been in Arua, the person he's been supporting, won decisively, even when he was in jail. So, Mr. Museveni and the NRM government look at Bobi Wine as the greatest threat and challenger to the leadership. So, you expect that Trump charges will be put against him. He will be tortured, he will be imprisoned, he will be intimidated. All sorts of nasty things will be done to him.
Asuman Baselirwa is the lawyer for popular Ugandan lawmaker Bobi Wine. He spoke with me from Kampala. Meanwhile, after spending 4 days in the custody of security agents, opposition legislators accused of stoning Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's armored vehicle are claiming torture. The army is disputing their claims, saying their injuries are the result of their involvement in political clashes in northern Uganda. For VOA, Halima Thumani reports from the capital, Kampala.
The Ugandan government is under pressure from human rights activists to explain pictures and reports of the brutal torture of legislators by security forces. The five legislators were campaigning for an opposition candidate in Monday's by-elections in the Arua municipality by-elections when they were arrested. Among them, Kassiano Wadri, who won the election, Robert Chagulanyi, commonly known as Bobi Wine, Francis Zake, Paul Muiru, and Gerald Karuhanga, and former legislator Michael Mabike. Four of the legislators are among 33 people charged with treason for allegedly pelting President Yoweri Museveni's armored vehicle with a stone. On Thursday, gruesome pictures of Francis Zake were shared on social media, showing his swollen fingers and head at a hospital in Gulu district in northern Uganda. Opposition leader Betty Awol Ochan:
you just see all the what, the effect of torture on him. The head is swollen. They have covered the mouth. And it looks like even the feeding is done through the nose. He is on a life machine. And I'm sure he was brought here, probably just pushed because they fear he was going to die.
Prosecutors charged Chagulanyi in a military court with possession of illegal firearms and ammunition. Equipment, the government claims, is ordinarily a monopoly of the defense forces. His lawyer, Enias Rukwango, was allowed to see the legislator.
He is just there in seclusion. He's in the hands of those soldiers there. He has not been allowed access to his own medical doctor or physician. He has not been taken to a private hospital. So he's just languishing there in pain. If you touched him everywhere, especially at the back here, he says he was hit here at the head, and it was at that moment that he blacked out.
The Uganda Human Rights Commission and the U.S. Mission, among others, expressed concern about reports the legislators and journalists have endured brutal treatment at the hands of security forces. They called for humane treatment, due process, and transparency. Brigadier Richard Karemire, spokesperson for the Uganda People's Defense Force, rejected claims of torture. He said Chagulanyi and the others suffered their injuries during the Arua chaos.
What I can tell you for sure is that it's not a culture of the UPDF. UPDF is trained to handle suspects, so definitely we cannot be held responsible for that. He's being taken good care of by the Uganda People's Defense Forces since he's now under the safe custody of our institution.
Museveni said he was not injured in the clashes. He warned that other political leaders have been acting with impunity and vowed they be punished according to the law. Halima Athmani, VOA News, Kampala.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the deadly Ebola virus continues to spread in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So far, it's claimed the lives of 42 people. Five experimental treatments are being used to help end the outbreak. VOA's Carol Pearson reports all of the treatments are safe, but scientists still don't know how effective they are.
In 1995, a patient sick with Ebola miraculously recovered. Doctors tested his blood and found that even after getting better, this man still had antibodies in his bloodstream to fight off the disease. The National Institutes of Health brought him to the United States and cloned the cells that successfully cleared Ebola. Scientists made multiple copies of this cell and found that if animals were injected, within 5 days of being exposed to Ebola, they didn't get sick. Because the antibody came from one cell, it's referred to as a monoclonal antibody. This one specifically is called monoclonal antibody 114, or MAB114, and it's now being used in the Democratic Republic of Congo to treat five people who have Ebola, with the hope that they will recover as well. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who heads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the health agency, says just because something works in animals doesn't mean it will also work in humans.
We cannot say whether it has shown any benefit because we don't have anything to compare it with.
The antibody is being given under the terms of compassionate use. It's the first time it's being used in an active outbreak. Other than the animal trial, there have been no clinical trials in humans. No one is getting a placebo to compare it with, but a previous study showed this monoclonal antibody was safe. Fauci said there is another drug called ZMapp, which is really a combination of three monoclonal antibodies that's also being used in the DRC outbreak. So far, there are no effective treatments for Ebola. Scientists are hopeful that the therapeutic antibodies could be the best way to stop the Ebola virus. An international study led by a California research institute suggests that antibodies may be valuable treatments against new viruses and could help a patient's immune system fight the Ebola virus after being infected. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
We are fighting for freedom.
Kampala mokotumba de jinja.
We are fighting for freedom.
Kabaleru kunjiri malara kasese.
We are fighting for freedom.
Soro tichitugum aruwa liragun.
We are fighting for freedom.
I say wakiso masaka bende mityana.
We are fighting for freedom.
Yo! We are living in a time similar to the one of slave trade. This operation is worse than apartheid. The gun is the master, citizen slave. The ball of Africa is bleeding. Question, what was the purpose of the liberation when we can't have a peaceful transition? What is the purpose of the constitution when the government disrespect the constitution? Where is my freedom of expression when you judge me because of my expression? Look what you're doing to this nation. What are you
teaching the future generation. See our leaders become misleaders, and see our mentors become tormentors. Freedom fighters become dictators. They look on the youth and say we are distractors.
We are fighting for freedom.
Bossy amalaba motukola chotera.
We are fighting for freedom.
Ebi bakwa chimoro to chadundu.
We are fighting for freedom.
Badelma sindi kabun karamoja.
We are fighting for freedom.
Oi machiri andongo poti mundi mujo.
We are fighting for freedom.
Situke baboi, atuchi manyinti okununule ngwanga chituka katako pabana ba Uganda fena. Era manyati botunulire bichamu nosirikire yo olide munsi yorukwe. Na fe abakulwanira kongwe nosirikira jolio vero tusatase. Jukira ntinewe bubera bumyunga wakunganye ingobu jitwala terinya. No matter your age, no matter your sex, no matter your religion, no matter your tribe, whether educated or uneducated, it's a revelation for the generation. Whether you are a doctor or a farmer, whether you are a teacher or policeman, could I be a tax driver or a student, could I be a lawyer, could I be a soldier?
We are fighting for freedom.
Usi tuke baboy, temo po baboy.
We are fighting for freedom.
Bana Uganda bali kumawanga.
We are fighting for freedom.
Abana baboda boda namwe mwebiririmu.
We are fighting for freedom.
Yes man, like Martin Luther said, in the end, we remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. When the going gets tough, the tough must get going. Especially when leaders become misleaders and mentors become tormentors. When freedom of expression becomes a target of suppression, opposition becomes our position.
ATFreeJaja.com.
Choice you,
Mafia or no rough. Ah, what's the day?
Facts on it.
Ah.
Yeah.
What the?
Chris Arthur.
Yeah. Me Tota.
Scotty again.
Ah. Oh, hey, ma, come to my hideout.
Hey there.
Make we hang out.
Huh?
Chrome, I sent here, yeah, they share me trap out.
Yeah. Hey.
Oh, hey, ma, come to my hideout.
Yeah.
Make we hang out.
Hey there.
Chrome, I sent here, yeah, they share me trap out.
Hey
there. Share me what trap out.
Trap out.
Trap out. Trap house. Tocando, baby, name ya no more, my lights out. She have your trap house. Trap house. My chalk over one corner. Meaning B before Bona. I gonna call my woody she one ground or be mini yona. Fuck. Major quad you knocked out. Kwame, I drop out. Cody and a Sprite, one shot now land the lighthouse.
Oh,
my chalk to a trap house. Mini chanta, a light out. Me Tracy, boy, chinty chest out.
Obi Obe Jejemi, you go pass out. Oh Lord, in you we trust. Tiakos, relax. My ish, bongas.
You do 18, muwa, shame fans.
Mohima, come to my hideout. Make we hang out. Chroma, Saint, yeah, yeah, they share trap house. Yeah. Mohima, come to my hideout. Make we hang out. Chroma, Saint, yeah, yeah, they share trap house. Hey, then, share me trap house. Trap house.
I say, well, who sent me here into you? Ha, what be the news? Send my back again. If you left from with this suffer, don't you dare come back again. She's been calling me for days, so me fa, that go pain. Send me boom one time, it go never be the same. No, on Ferrari, name a place she can go. Straight to the money, she the run, Usain Bolt. My dude broke, no, until me a single. I done a damage, I will be an amish, share the same clothes. To the keba, or buying cheba. You see the weather, she my me, you're very clever. But China made that ten a beggar, do it however. Also, when yeah, you feel be better, it's our era. Round up, Charlie.
She have me a trap house. Trap house. She have me a trap house. Trap house. Tocando, bruh, me navy, I know my lights out. She have me a trap house. Trap house. She have me a trap house. Trap house. She have me a trap house. Trap house. Candle, baby, if you are no more, my lights out. She have me a trap house. Trap house. For him, I come to my hideout. Make we hang out. Chroma, Saint, yeah, yeah, they share me trap house. Hey, for him, I come to my hideout. Make we hang out. Chroma, Saint, yeah, yeah, they share me trap house. Me then, she have me a trap house. Trap house. She have me a trap house.
I want to ya.
Trap house. Tocando, bruh, me navy, I know my lights out. She have me a trap house.
I want to ya.
Trap house.
Go.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, producer Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, a crazy man can be recognized not by his words, but by his actions. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The political situation in Zimbabwe has deteriorated since the disputed July 30th presidential election, in which incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa was declared the winner over challenger Nelson Chamisa by a narrow margin. The United States is gravely concerned by credible reports of numerous detentions, beatings, and other abuses of Zimbabweans, in particular targeting of opposition activists, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. She went on to say there is no role for violence, intimidation, or harassment in the new Zimbabwe. In another development, Ms. Nauert expressed deep concern over the fact that Zambia chose to hand over former Zimbabwean Minister of Finance Tendai Biti to the Zimbabwean authorities, and in the face of reported Zambian court order blocking his expulsion from Zambia. In addition to being former finance minister, Mr. Biti is a senior figure in the Movement for Democratic Change. This decision is particularly disheartening, said Ms. Nauert, given the courage that Zambia showed in sheltering thousands of Zimbabwean freedom fighters from Rhodesian aggression in the days of Zimbabwe's independence struggle. U.S. officials will be discussing this matter with Zambia's leaders. The government of Zimbabwe is now responsible for Tendai Biti's safety and welfare, cautioned Ms. Nauert. We call on Zimbabwe's leaders to guarantee Mr. Biti's physical safety and ensure his constitutional and human rights are respected, consistent with the rule of law and Zimbabwe's international obligations and commitments. In an effort to register its gravest concerns, the United States convoked the ambassadors of both Zimbabwe and Zambia. A judge has since released Biti on conditional bail. He remains under house arrest. Zimbabwe had a historic opportunity to move the country toward a brighter future for all its citizens, but an electoral process marred by violence that does not respect constitutional rights and procedures is not a step towards that future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA.